This is my journey, inspired one story at a time. A library of leaders was created. It began as a journey to learn. As time went on, it began to grow. All it needed was a platform, and this podcast was created to listen, to inspire, to share. I am a storyteller, and this is my journey. Welcome to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. My name is Steve Anderson, and I'm your host. And today's guest is a fascinating gentleman by the name of Tony Gemignani. Tony Gemignani is the chef and owner of 28 locations in Northern California and Las Vegas. Tony's Pizza, Capo's, Giovanni Italian Specialties, Tony's Coal-Fired Pizza, multiple slice houses by Tony, all in San Francisco, and Pizza Rock in Sacramento and Las Vegas, and Tony's of North Beach and Slice House in Las Vegas. A 13-time world pizza champion, Tony has been perfecting his craft for more than two decades and holds an impressive set of awards for his pizza making and tossing skills. He is proprietor of the International School of Pizza in San Francisco, where he certifies chefs from around the world, and is an official U.S. ambassador of Neapolitan pizza by the city of Naples, Italy, a prestigious title only given to three people in the entire world. Tony has even been inducted four times into the Guinness World Book of Records. Tony has appeared on several popular shows, including Good Morning America, The Today Show, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and is a regular on the Food Network. He even took home the gold medal at the Food Network Pizza Champions Challenge. He is the author of Pizza, Tony and the Pizza Champions, and most recently, The Pizza Bible, the definitive book on pizza. I was very honored to be a participant in December of 2017 in the International School of Pizza. Tony was my mentor and my coach, and now I am an official pizziolo in Italy and the United States. I've seen him in action. He's an amazing person, and I can't wait to get the interview going with Tony today. Tony, welcome to the program. I'm really excited to have you on. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, you grew up on an apricot farm in Fremont, California. And how did your life on the farm prepare you for the world of being a chef, a restaurant owner, and an entrepreneur?
You know, when I think about that, I get asked that once in a while. But, you know, the work ethic of a farmer. You know, we lived with our grandpa. He was an Italian farmer at Fremont. We had about 35 acres. And, you know, we grew apricots, cherries, fava beans, and pretty much everything he had. So just, I was a farmer up until I was 18 years old, really. We cut and dried apricots. You know, I'd watch my grandpa go out and get up before the sun rose. And he would come back when the sun was coming down. It was starting to turn night, you know, and he ate outside in a shed his lunch. And, you know, we had dinner together when my dad came home from work. And after I came home from school, I would be the one, if it wasn't the weekend, I would be out there helping him out. And then, of course, the weekends and the summers were a lot of farming, a lot of cherries, a lot of apricots came in during that time when school started to be out. So, yeah, that work ethic, you know, he was the hardest working man I ever knew. And people say, where'd you get your work ethic from? And one was seeing my grandpa. He just loved the land. He loved farming. He loved his fruit. And it just seeing that, being around produce, being around fruit, vegetables, just everything. And I mean, we had, you know, he had cows and Clydesdales and chickens and we had pigeons. It was a real, you know, true farm. Just being around that, ingredients and fresh ingredients, it a lot of my background is, you know, when they say when you're making a pizza, you know, how do you know what works and what doesn't? I'm like, you know what? I just grew up with it, man. I knew eating fig and some strong cheese, you know, with that fig and some balsamic vinaigrette on the side just worked. So it's like, you know, let's just throw that onto a pizza. So it's like, you know, so.
That's awesome. Now, you have won 8 world championships in pizza acrobatics and 13 world pizza championships in cooking pizzas. So obviously, you have to have the skill to do that, but where does that competitive edge come from?
Well, it's kind of a combined competition. So I won eight, and then I ended up several more and made it up to a 13-time world champion. You know, I played soccer growing up. I played sports. My dad was a coach. He was actually one of my coaches in soccer. I loved to swim. I played anything from badminton to a track. I mean, like, I just love sports in general. And, you know, that drive to win, to become better, to become faster, figuring out how to just do it when times are tough or you're down, it very much comes out in the kitchen. The kitchen is very much like organized, you know, sports. It's a team effort. It's not just such an individual, which a lot of times you think it is, but it's not. And that goes from back of the house, front of the house, from the bar back to the bartender, to the busboy, to the guy on the saute, to the expediter. I mean, it really is a team effort when it comes to a restaurant. And every night is a game. And every night you're trying to figure out how to be better, be faster, and also execute. And you don't always win. but I do like to win. So I really am competitive in the competition world, and I'm competitive within my own restaurants. And when it comes to that, you know, me and as an individual, I'm my worst critic, I'm my hardest critic, and for me, I always think it can be better. Even when I won that championship in Naples, 2007, best pizza in the world, I got up on that stage while I was holding that trophy. I said to myself, and I think I know how to make it better. I think I could tweak the dough. And, you know, I remember telling my wife this at the time. She's like, what are you, nuts? You beat everybody in the world. What do you think? I'm like, no. I think if I just added 0.5% more salt, we upped the hydration. You know, I did this. And I came back and tweaked it and did things. So, yeah, I always think it can be better. I think the time that you think that in your life that you're the best or there's nothing else for you to do and you stop learning or wanting, I feel that's the time that you really have taken a step back and you're losing yourself and insight and what it really is to progress and be better.
Yeah, so well said. That is such a great mindset to have. This podcast explores leadership, and I've seen you in action, as you know, as one of your students in your International School of Pizza. And your passion and dedication every day is impressive. So how do you keep up the pace?
Good question. My wife likes to say, what do you have, like batteries on your back and you recharge them or what? I don't sleep a lot. I'm constantly thinking and trying to be creative. I don't know if it goes back to when I was a kid. You know, I was a lefty growing up. I was a lefty. My teacher made me become a righty, and I wanted to be an artist. You know, it kind of screwed me up. It screwed me up in my mind. It screwed up a lot of things. And when it comes to I'm striving to be an artist. So a lot of things that, you know, when you have a brother, older brother, and he's 5 years older than you and you want to be better than him, show him that you can do it. Show your dad you can do it. Show your dad you can be good at something. There was this constant competition either between myself, because I can never draw. I'm a lefty. Like when I bat left, I bowl right, I golf left. I'm kind of all over the place. And there were a lot of things I wanted to do in life, especially being an artist. I'm really big into comics. I was always a big Marvel fan. I had the worst penmanship. I think I could have been an amazing artist, but because of that transition from left to right, it really kind of screwed me up in a lot of ways, actually. And it wanted me, a lot of things I wanted to do when I was younger, I ended up not doing. There's this thing inside, this drive that makes me want to, I don't know, just continuously kind of prove to myself that I can do something. I don't know if it goes back to that, but sometimes I feel that it does and or can, because yeah, there are a lot of things I wanted to do in life that I just couldn't do. But then again, it, you know, made me good in pizza acrobatics, that left the right transition. It made me different. Like, my art kind of comes out in the pizzas I make. A lot of people, when they see pizzas that I make, especially in competition, or if you look at Neapolitan isn't a really pizza that looks super pretty. They don't take time to place the basil in certain parts or piece the pieces of mozzarella over the top. It's just like you throw it on, you stretch it out, and you just kind of throw it in your oven, and it comes out super, super artisan and almost not as pretty as you can. And when I'm making pizzas, I tend to take a little more time to make sure that basil leaf was here, almost like an artist, and this is here. So does my art come out in my pizza? Do I really focus on trying to be creative and you know, your eye, you eat with your eyes? So a lot of things that came out of that. And I don't know where I get the time to really my wife, you know, I wake up and I had, like this morning, I woke up and I figured out three things I want to do at Capo's, one of my restaurants. And I guess my mind relaxed for, you know, 6 hours of the sleep that I got, which wasn't much, because I sleep about 5-6 hours a night. And, you know, I'm always thinking, I'm always trying to figure out ways to be creative, in my own restaurants or just in life.
Now, you are the chef and owner of 28 locations in California and Las Vegas. How do you manage your business of that size and still have hands-on in the kitchen, as I have witnessed at Tony's Pizza, Capo's, and Giovanni's Italian Specialties?
That's a good question. You know, as I've grown, it's been harder and harder. You know, you're always trying to build your infrastructure. And when it comes to going from a one store to two to a multi-unit stores, that was always the challenge, because how do you really have the foundation or the monies to pay for that structure? You know, as I grew, the growing pains, as people know, in our industry, it's hard to really be able to grow. And at the same time, as you're growing, you know, how can you support a corporate structure at salaries that could be making more than what you're making already? So there was a lot of baby steps involved in that. There was a lot of delegating when it came to not only your GMs at all your locations, but if you have a vice president or a regional manager or a regional chef, or if you go into the accounting world and you're growing and making your bookkeeping stronger and you're working with a PEO company like Engage, and you're trying to go from, let's just say, a payroll company that's tiny up to like a paychecks or a ADP, and then onto a company called like Engage that is much stronger and has a better HR plan. So you're constantly building. For me, as I've grown, and I grew pretty quick, you know, it took me 17 years to leave my brother and go to one store. And then within 10, 12, 13 years, which I'm almost been in the business for 30 years, I grew from one store to close to 30. You know, there's a lot of different parts to that equation. I have, you know, the licensing division, which I oversee with a couple of my partners and my vice president. And then you have, and that's licensing like in ballparks, stadiums, in casinos, mostly. And then you look at my stores that I own now in San Francisco, which I have Tony's, Capo's, Slice House, and Giovanni's, that's owned primarily by me. And then you have everything else, like the Pizza Rocks and some of the other concepts I have in Las Vegas, out of the state, or in Sacramento, California. So there's kind of three parts to my equation when you look at that in its entirety. Luckily, I have a good team. I have good infrastructure. It did take time for me to get to that. And there were times that I was overstretching myself. I couldn't handle it. I was pulled every way. And I needed to figure out a way to make my life much, much more easier. I am a hands-on guy. You're talking to a guy that, if you talk to a lot of guys that are entrepreneurs, that, you know, guys that are making pizzas, or the blue collar guy that all of a sudden became corporate. I'm the kind of like that guy, and I still am that guy. I get my hands dirty. But then again, I have to say, yeah, I have to be in the office too. And then you feel bad because you're in the office or you're working out of your home, and you're like, geez, I know there's a guy in front of that oven that's, you know, it's 100 degrees out and he's sweating like dogs, and God, I need to be there. So you have that Tony and me that wants to be there and be in the mix, and you have the other Tony that says, hey, you know, you got to get this other stuff done. And it's a challenge. It's a challenge for anybody that's growing, and you have to accept it, and you have to teach people, and you have to grow, and there's a lot involved in it personally, and then also just understanding business. So it's you know, I'm learning every day, but it's a big challenge in our industry and people's industry.
Now, your motto is respect the craft, And what does that mean to you, and what do you want your students and admirers to understand about that statement?
Well, you know, here was this guy in the industry. I believe I started in 1991. I won a few championships. I kind of toured around the world. I thought I kind of knew it. I was young. A lot of guys think they know it all when they're younger. And I kind of had that a little bit. I know pizza. I've been to New York, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, year 2000, I took a trip to Naples. I was with my wife. We're on our honeymoon. It was June, and on our way to Sorrento, I said, I need to stop in Naples. I got to try this Neapolitan thing, you know. And I went to Naples. We went to Trianon, got off the train station. I sat in Trianon, and it's kind of near the Spacca Napa area, right next to Don Michele, a famous pizzeria that people know around the world. And we're at Trianon, and there's this pizzaiolo there, and he's sitting there, and he's kind of like, one guy smoking a cigarette, the other one's like hanging out, you know, really typical Naples, like, you know, feel. We ordered two pizzas. I'm watching this guy slap out this dough, which I don't know how to slap it out in that way. And here I am, this acrobat, and this guy who's kind of, you know, maybe known in the U.S., and I'm this world champion, and I'm looking at it, and he's using the marble, he's, you know, sauces it, he cheeses it, the margarita, he slides it onto the peel, he puts it in an oven, it cooks in so fast, it cooks in like, you know, probably 60 seconds. I mean, it's where a Neapolitan could cook like 90 seconds or under. But that pizza that day probably cooked in 60 seconds, it landed on a plate, they didn't cut it, it put it in front of us. There was a margarita, and there was another pizza that was like a combo pizza that was almost like, maybe it was called the pizza lasagna that had like, just, you know, it was almost like an American pizza that had a bunch of ingredients on it. My wife goes at it. She tackles it. She's starting to eat it. And I'm looking at it. And I have this epiphany. I'm looking. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. You know, I'm saying to myself, like, how the heck did he get that pizza out of the oven in like, you know, 60 seconds? And what the heck was that move on the table? And why was that so simple? It's just a cheese pizza with basil on it, right? You know, but no, it's not. And it wasn't. And it isn't. And I'm looking at it, and my wife looks at me and says, you know, what are you doing? And I said, like, I don't know how to make this. She's like, well, just eat it, you know. And I said, no, I it's like everything at that time that I learned or was taught almost felt incorrect. It was something at that moment that I said, I need to learn this, and this is something that I should have learned or even known about. When I first learned, it was like, if you're teaching somebody math, you know, and you're teaching somebody an equation, or you're teaching somebody how to write, it was all of a sudden I learned how to make this American style pizza, and I passed what should have been taught to me, and it should have been true Verace pizza Napolitana. It should have been the authentic way of making pizza the way it was well over 100 years ago, and I don't know how to make this. And there was a disrespect in my trade, in my craft, and I didn't respect the craft. I looked at this, and at that moment, the respect the craft was something like, you know what, I'm going to go back and figure this out. And before it was, you could Amazon it and go online and really kind of find your every San Marzano and flour and Tipo 00, you know. You couldn't really find that. You had to source it. You had to research it. You had to make the call and make the connection. And I practiced that at home. And through those years of 2000 to 2007 to 2009, that the words respect the craft came out. I spoke about it in a keynote that I did at Pizza Today after Tony's. I mean, it's on our tattooed on my hands. It's on our pizza boxes. It's on our shirts. I mean, really, when you look at it, it's my motto. You know, I eat, drink, and live it, and it's something that it's, you know, it's your mission statement. It's the vision. So yeah, that was something that that really kind of hit me hard, and I realized that I needed to reteach myself everything that I was taught.
Well, you certainly live it. I can tell you that having been there and seen you in action, that you walk your talk, and that's impressive.
Oh, thank you.
So, many pizza places specialize in just kind of one type of pizza, and yet at Tony's, you do Neapolitan, Chicago, Detroit, Sicilian, Roman, New York, California style, and many more. Why have you chosen to be so diverse with your menu?
Well, that's a good question. You know, when it came to diversity, you know, when I was going to open up Tony's, I was going to open up a concept that maybe was like Don Michele in Naples. Two styles, margarita, marinara, that's it. I'm the pizzaiolo. It is what it is. And then I started thinking, you know, I went to St. Louis and I traveled to New York and I've been to Staten Island and Italy, and I started looking at all the styles that I learned over the years. And there were so many styles, so many great pizzas. I, you know, over the years, I was traveling a lot. You know, it wasn't just Google it. Oh, let me Google what Detroit-style pizza is. Too many people are doing that nowadays. But back then, there was an experience. There was being in Naples or being in Rome or actually, you know, watching pizza makers or talking and learning or even cooking in their kitchens. There were a lot of times that I actually traveled. I won a number of championships when I was younger, and I was fortunate enough to travel a lot. So I was working at Paisano's Pizzeria in Castrovalle with my brother for those 17 years. But for a lot of those years, I went to Florida, to Fargo, to Disney. I did festivals in, you know, St. Louis and Minnesota. And when it came to it, you know, I had all this knowledge. And back then, there was only pizza guys that only did one thing. You know, it was like, hey, I'm a New York guy. That's what I do. I hate Chicago. This is what I'm making. And you always kind of grew up with that. There's only one style of pizza. I was a guy that celebrated every style of pizza. If it was done right, it was pretty amazing. And I had those trips to Chicago that it was amazing. And New York, where it was, you know, incredible. So when it came to opening up a concept and opening up a school, I looked in the heart of, you know, San Francisco, Little Italy. I said, you know, be doing a pizza concept here to have multiple ovens, multiple styles. Let's start off with 5 ovens and I'll progress into having 7 ovens, and it's the right flour, the right tomato, the right, you know, oven and temperature that it can go into. And I really looked at it in a diverse kind of way, you know, especially now. I mean, the consumer is so much smarter now than they were. They like to explore. It's diverse. If you look at it, you can see all these different styles that they're there to offer on Instagram or on people's posts. But when you look at, you know, just the average eater now, they want more, or they grew up with it, and you can get it and you can recreate it. So when it comes to diversity on a menu, I think it's so important. Now, especially looking at, you know, the millennials or even the centennials that are kind of coming in to an age. And I just think it's important and valuable to certain concepts.
Yeah, the hardest thing is when you're sitting in the restaurant is trying to decide which one to order, because they're all so damn good.
Well, the great thing is, you know, when you go to a restaurant, you want to be the restaurant where you've been there, done that. Or do you want to be the restaurant and say, man, when we go back, we got to have this one, and that one. And that's the thing, that if you're sitting down at Tony's and you're eating a New Yorker that came out of a coal oven, and all of a sudden a Roman drop right next to you, or a Detroit or a thin crust, and you're like, whoa, what's that? Oh, yeah, or that's their burger. Oh, wow, I didn't even know they had burgers. Yeah, it's one of the best things ever. Like, so that's the kind of thing on a menu that for me is like, yeah, you don't want them coming back once. You want them coming back 8 times until they're exhausted, or you know, keep them coming back. And as soon as they think that you're done and they've had it all, that's when you drop a new style in their lap and you're like, boom, what do you think of that? And they're like, oh my, I never even heard of that. That's great. So it's that's the kind of excitement I like.
Yeah, that's impressive. You know, as an executive coach, I very well recognized when I was there, the organization that you have has very talented staff, like Laura and Diego and Matt, and they've all won major pizza competitions as well. And they've been with you for a long time in an industry that has a pretty high turnover. So why do they stay, and how do you keep them engaged as part of your team?
Yeah, you know, I have a lot of long 10-year, you know, employees that have been with me a long time. Laura's still with me. Tiago actually moved to Austin. He's going to open up a pizzeria, relatively soon.
Great.
So yeah, grooming employees, like if you look at even Audrey Sherman that went off to open up in Boulder, Colorado. If you look at them, I think it's just exciting. It's that coach in me that comes out. It's grooming these young employees that have a skill And sometimes they just need help on how to use it, what to do. They need guidance. So for me, it's more exciting just seeing them be faster, better than me, or, you know, it's more rewarding than seeing me win sometimes or do well in something. And they went off and won championships, and I've done as much as I could with them. And if you see a lot of the foundations that they have, they really learned at Tony's and or even earlier than that. Like Laura was at Paisano's actually before that. But, you know, it's just, I think it's just important. You know, people think that, you know, it has to be kept in and nobody can know your recipes. And, you know, it's such an old way of thinking. You know, it's one of those things. There's a mentality in life sometimes that, you know, you should hold somebody back because they're not ready yet. And I feel that's you're almost looking like a, you know, Kobe Bryant, who was holy, should he have stayed in college and played all those years, or was he just good enough to go to the NBA? You know, if you look at something like an Audrey Sherman, who works for me, she was one of my students that was there, and I had probably six students in that class. I had a chef that was a Michelin star chef in that class. We all stretched out pizza on day one, and here's this Michelin star chef that's been cooking for 30 years, and he's banging it out on a saute line Friday night, and he's Mr. Badass, you know, and all of a sudden he can't even make, you know, hold a pizza. Like, he can't even stretch it out. Here comes Audrey, and she like opens up a pizza like it was nothing. How long you been doing that for? That was my first one. Huh. Okay, do it again. She gets the corner, she pushes it on the middle, she stretches it out, and she looked like a pizza maker from New York that was been making pizzas for 50 years. I'm like, you're kidding me. Like, you never made pizzas? No. Oh, okay. You know, so I take her to Naples. She becomes my pizzaiola. I train her. She's in Neapolitan, and she's the first woman to ever enter in the competition in Naples, in the world championships in the North. So we're there. She's young. She's only making pizzas, I believe, at that time for maybe 8 months. And we're there, and I told her, you know, when you go up to that oven, go say molto legna, so say more wood, because she likes to burn hot. And she likes to burn hot, so I told her, say molto legna, I mean more wood. And these Neapolitan guys say, what? Like, look at her, like, you're this kid, what are you talking about? And she says, molto legna, come on, like, let's go. So, well, okay, she puts more wood in it, gets really hot. She's just young girl, let alone in a kind of a man's kind of world in Naples, you know, in the Naples division. And she makes a pizza that's amazing, under 90 seconds, lands on her plate. She goes out to the judges. She goes to the judges, and the first judge just says to her, and they're all like hardcore old school Neapolitans, they say, how old are you? The first question, she says at the time, maybe 22, maybe, or 23. She was young. And they say, second question, how long have you been making pizzas? She says, 8 months. The third question was, who lets you make pizzas after 8 months of working? Like, and she said, you know, those are the first three questions that they asked her. And she said, well, Tony did. I'm right behind her. I said, is the pizza good? Why do you care if she's been making pizzas for only 8 months? It was like, it was almost sacrilegious to me even to say, like, okay, well, you shouldn't be touching the dough yet. You should be working the oven for 2 years until you're able to really be allowed to touch dough. There's a mentality there that is a very old mentality. And when it comes to that, it bothers me, because if you have it, you have it. And there's a lot of pizza makers out there. It's almost, at one time, it was a very old kind of way of thinking. And for me, I've groomed 16-year-old pizza makers out of high school that can blow anybody away on the pizza line back in the Paisano days out of the water. And I think that's just an old way of thinking. And I try to not look at that. If you're young, or if you may not know, or things, I really try and groom them into the best pizza makers or cooks that I can.
And have you ever figured out how many pizza chefs that you've mentored and trained in your pizza schools and your travels around the world?
Oh God, there's so many. And if you look at like some cooks like Ann Kim out of Minnesota, Smokovich out of Denver, you look at some of these talented people that want it, they have the drive. You know, I can teach anybody to be great or try to be great or teach them as much as I can, but for them to really bring it to a level, it's always on the inside, and it's no big secret. Anybody can learn something, but it's just, yeah, there's been so many operators over the years that I've taught. Now they have multi-units, they're speakers, you know, they're on TV. It's pretty exciting to see that. And that's the coach, and I think that's my dad and me that is excited to see that. And there's, you know, it's just a great feeling.
Well, speaking of TV, you've been on Good Morning America, the Today Show, the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, the Food Network, and then you also teach large audiences at the annual Pizza Expo in Las Vegas. Do you enjoy that performance type of communication, or is it just something necessary that you do to build your brand?
I mean, it's always a little bit of both. I enjoy it. I mean, being on TV at an early age, you know, I was on Leno at 23. I was young. I was just won my third title. It was the biggest show I've ever been on, and it'll still be the biggest show, I think. And at that time, you know, it was that nervousness. And you know, you always want to be interviewed. You always want to have the right, like this show right now. It's good questions. It's a great interview. And I've been on shows like with Howie Mandel where he was nervous and he's a germaphobe and he didn't know how to, you know, it was just odd to be around him throwing pizzas. And you got Jay Leno that's smooth and he's a comedian and he's funny, but he said the right things. And so everyone's a little different, you know. Some of your local news shows are the best shows to be on because, you know, there's great questions. It's about the neighborhood and what's local. And then you get some national spots that, you know, you're with Diane Sawyer and you're on Good Morning America. You're in Times Square and you have that feeling. And they brought a bunch of kids on to toss pizzas and they're asking you about your pizzeria. And it's just so great to be an independent operator on a show and representing your town or city. I think that as an operator, the marketing side of it is so valuable because you don't have the dollars like these Domino's and Pizza Hut's out there to run a Super Bowl ad for multi-million dollars for less than a minute. Or it's like, you know, you really be able to get on a special interest. You're sitting down on the couch talking to somebody and they're really interested in you. And, you know, and then you look at the Food Network and Travel Channels that you're really able to highlight your pizzas, your style, and in-depth on your dough, or Guy Fieri kind of talking to you about your starter and what's going in it, or you're in a competition on the Food Network. I mean, there's so many different lines when it comes to media. There's ones where you can really showcase your pizza and it's in your kitchen and it's hot and you're able to highlight your deep dish or cast iron. So they're all a little different, and they're all pretty awesome to do.
Now, I'm trying to imagine walking into an international pizza competition in Italy as an American chef and going head-to-head with Italian masters who think you have no chance to win, and then you come out with a top prize. How intimidating was that the first time? And then how do you explain doing it 12 more times again?
Going in Italy back then, America never got respect at all. But it was nothing. We were literally, they didn't even know who we were. You know, even when I first won my competition in acrobatics, that was one thing, and that was in the year 2000. And we finally got the respect in that category. And then all of a sudden, there's the cooking element. Okay, so he's this, you know, guy that can toss a pizza around. How do you get the respect now in cooking? And that was actually a lot. There's a lot to learn when you go to Italian soil and you're competing in the competitive world. You know, it's not ounces, it's grams, it's liters. When it comes to it, it's the W factor of your dough, not the protein. It's the length of the maturation. It's the type of flour used. It's the strength of the flour. And when it came to the questions of the judges and working in ovens that you maybe weren't familiar with, if it's a wood oven or an electric oven that you didn't see out here as often as you do now, when it came to sourcing ingredients and not overtopping, not using, depending on the category that you're in, and understanding how to make dough in your hotel room and either bringing your starter or starting your starter pre-ferment, you know, within your when you get there, do you bring it when, you know, from your restaurant? There's a lot of things to understanding all that. Traveling with food, what can I find there? What don't they like? What do they like? So adapting to the Italy way, and you're not going to go into Italy and show them, hey, this is how you make pizzas. You have to definitely adapt, and learning, understanding that, teaching that to the other competitors, since I was pretty much one of the first ones in both of those categories, in cooking and in acrobatics in the games. It was a lot, and there was a lot of disrespect. There was a lot of, you know, look at these guys, their jokes, and how you wear, how clean you were, how you used your tools, what you did when you presented your pizza, and how you spoke and explained it. It was very important to have, even from having a translator that can speak in a dialect that's correct to the Italian language, and that's usually a Toscano like dialect, like a dialect that would be more from northern or southern, not southern Italy. It's just a lot to it. If you have a broken Italian and you're speaking to a judge, you say, what is this guy in third grade, but he's 40 years old? Like, what is he saying? Like, his words are so off. So there's so many things involved in the competition itself, other than just making an amazing pizza. it's a lot to it. People don't realize that. So going in there and winning and cooking, it was quite the shock, almost a disgrace that the Americans won. And then there was like, okay, my name was just announced. There's 3,000 Neapolitans in the arena. Almost 95% of everybody in this place wants to kill me.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And you're like, okay, how do I go up on the stage not to get too excited, get the cup, get out of there before you're, you know, shot or stabbed in this in the middle of Naples? So there was this, okay, and then you came back and you got a little more respect, and you come back, you bring your team, and you have a bigger team, and you start respecting them, they start respecting you. There was it took a long time, many, many years. I've been competing for over 20 years now in Italy. I was the first to compete there, and I still bring the biggest team there every year. But yeah, it took, and there still is a little bit of a disrespect or like, you know, there for some of the competitors, and they'll see it. You'll look at me or look at this person or look at Laura. Laura's respected. Laura Meyer, you look at different people, and then they'll say, oh, there's a new guy, and he's, you know, not wearing all white in competition, not wearing a hat in competition, didn't clean up after himself, didn't know grab the right tool, the in-peel or the out-peel, and they're looking at this guy, and he doesn't know how to work the oven, and he shouldn't even be in this category, and they're just making fun of him and speaking in Italian and talking bad about him, and it's like, oh, man, he brought a pre-parbake, and he's using meat and potatoes, and he's not using prosciutto and arugula, or whatever he did in that category. There's a lot to it, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah, well, it's just so impressive, too, that, I mean, 13 times, 13 world championships, no one's even close. No one has even come close to that.
No, there's a guy maybe in Italy that's won a lot of championships. But now 13's a lot. And there was a time I won in the South, at a pretty big competition, but man, I get roused about it by my own teammates. It was, I won a triple crown and I won three competitions, first in acrobatics, in, cooking, in Classica and Pan. And it was called the International Pizza Challenge. It was probably more competitors there than other competitions, but they didn't have world behind it. So for me, I just, you know, audition almost like a boxer to say, yeah, I'm the world champ. You're like, no, not really. You didn't really compete in the right category. That I kind of look at it that way. I guess I can add another three to that 13, but we'll just keep it 13. I want to make sure it always has world behind it. I hate guys that don't have that. It bothers me.
Now, again, you know, a huge accolade. So you are the U.S. ambassador of Neapolitan pizza from the city of Naples. Naples, Italy, that is. And it's a title that you have as only one of three people in the world. So how did that come to be, and what does that mean to you?
Yeah, at the time it was Spain, and Japan and the U.S. There was a big gathering, big event in Naples. I was flown out, and I flew out with actually a couple people that were there. Some people from the U.S. were there too. And they had this big celebration, almost like it was an honor to receive it. We all cooked in front of the press. We cooked in front of our wood-fired ovens. I remember, I believe Audrey was there at that time as well, if I remember right. Audrey, the girl I was talking about earlier, lady. And yeah, it was something that Caputo and the city of Naples put on, and they – it was funny. I was never certified in Neapolitan pizza. For me, when I went to compete at the Cup in 07, I was certified in Pizza Classica, Pizza Italia, which is in the pan, and Pizza Impala, which is very, very pretty much like Roman. So here I was, this certified master in classic pizza, pan pizza, and Roman pizza. And for me, I never went to Naples. And at the time, there was only one other school in the U.S. It was a VPN school. And at the time, I said to myself, if I just learned this craft that I saw in the year 2000 on my honeymoon, if I just practice this, maybe I can just, you know, compete in Naples somewhere or something in Neapolitan. Well, the World Pizza Cup came around in 07. I was already certified in, I believe, 2006 in the other categories, but Neapolitan is just different. It's its own category. So I ended up going to 07. I went to the World Pizza Cup. I ended up winning that, like I just talked about, getting shot or killed in that competition. And for years, I wasn't this APN or VPN certified guy. Well, Naples elected three people that did more for, you know, Neapolitan than people that, you know, some of the most people in the world. And the APN ended up giving me this ambassadorship that here I was, this guy that never even got certified through either of the associations in Naples, but they ended up giving me this. It's quite the honor, and cooking in front of some of the most famous pizzaiolos there in Naples outside. At that time was pretty special. It was pretty awesome. And, it was an honor, considering that I was this American guy that really never got certified in Neapolitan. But what can they say? I won the competition. Can they say I don't know how to make Neapolitan pizza? So
now you've written the Pizza Bible, which is an incredible book and has sold extremely well and has received critical acclaim from many. When you wrote the book, who is your target audience on that? Is it more chefs, or is it more everyday people?
It's been both, actually. You know, it was a book that I wrote that was definitely geared towards the home chef, but it talked about, you know, it talked about fundamentals in our industry. It talked about ingredients. It talked about equipment. When you wrote a book 10 years ago, which I did, I wrote a book called Pizza. I couldn't talk so much about grande cheese or cup and char pepperoni or Detroit pans or, you know, a Stefano Ferrara Mugnini oven or stuff. It was like, if you couldn't find it in your store when you write a book and they sent your book out and they look at your references and you'd say, okay, we can't find sea salt back then. This is back then. We don't know what that is. Went to four stores. They found this olive oil. They couldn't find it. It was such a pain. Now you can Amazon it, Google it. You could find that San Marzano you heard about, or try and get the Alta Cucina or Valorosa tomato that you've always wanted. You can actually find it. So this book was really a pizza professional, a restaurant guy that is teaching, you know, home chefs, home pizza makers, how important it is to use quality ingredients that you really can't find in your typical grocery store, but you may be able to find it online now. And it was important to understand the steps and the methods and what I do when it came to making meatballs from scratch, or a two-part cracker thin pizza how I do it. Or even my Chicago deep dish, or a cast iron, or really like showcasing, you know, St. Louis pizza, which you don't see in pizza books really that often, or Detroit pizza, which you never really saw in books, especially pizza books at all, I don't think. So highlighting styles of pizza that you can now make at home, and really showcasing pizza steels or starters or You know, it's just important to understand the different types of flours that are out there. It's not just grabbing your all-purpose flour out of your cupboard that you make your cookies and cakes with. It's about, you know, all Trumps, and it's about, you know, central milling, and it's about, you know, Caputo, and really understanding temperatures and proteins. And, you know, so it was important to really get a book that was user-friendly. It was easy to understand. There's a masterclass that you can go through. And we definitely talked a lot about starters and a lot of things that I'm doing in my restaurants to really make that pizza at home. And it really shows Home Chef that you can make restaurant pizza at home. And it was important to me.
Yeah, it's well done. And it certainly is my pizza Bible, that's for sure. And just as a sidelight, you know, you taught me well, because every time I make a pizza for people around here, they swear it's the best pizza they've ever had. They maybe haven't been to Tony's, but at least out here they say it's the best they've ever had.
Thank you.
Now, when you go to Italy to learn and grow as a pizzaiolo, share with us what a typical day would be like as you travel to Italy and use your time wisely there.
Sure. You know, like, I always try and make it interesting and educational. You know, one of the last trips I went to Italy, we went truffle hunting. I always wanted to go truffle hunting, you know, with dogs, where they sniff out truffles that are buried, and they kind of dig them up, and we find, you know, black winter, you know, either winter truffle, or you can find white truffles or whatever. So we went in Tuscany, and we went truffle hunting. And then, you know, you're talking with a company called Savini, and the Savini group is a small family that has anywhere from white truffle oils, a fresh truffle, the truffle honey, or a Parmigiano cream that's truffled out. And those are kind of things I like to experience. You know, I went to a gelato making class with the world champion gelato maker. I researched him, and that was great in San Gimignano. We stayed there for a few days and researched, you know, how he did gelato. So there's a lot of times there's tours to Parmigiano Reggiano. There's Prosciutto di Parma tours on a lot of the purveyors that I use. Culatella, like understanding culatella, which is it was kind of similar to like a prosciutto, and how you're able to like use it on a pizza, and there's always something to learn. You know, I was supposed to be going to Italy now, and I was going to go up to Genoa and make pesto from scratch. We make a pesto from scratch at all of our location, but a mortar and pestle, you know, making it from scratch, you know, in Genoa where pesto originated from. A Genovese type pesto and learning focaccia, which it originated from Genoa. There was a limoncello class I was going to teach. I was going to learn and we're going to go down to Sorrento for that. So yeah, every time I go to Italy, there's a lot of education. Usually I'll bring something back with me, like a purveyor or like, you know, something new that kind of add to a recipe or some sort of technique. So I'm always like learning, man. I'm always going out, kind of venturing off. It's always great. I think it's valuable and important.
Now, this COVID-19 crisis has crippled the restaurant industry, and San Francisco was also one of the first areas to shelter in place. So how are you managing your restaurant empire in these challenging times that we're all in?
It's been a challenge right now, a lot, because I'm all over the map. You have the arenas and most of the licensings are closed. So casinos are closed, ballparks are closed, arenas are closed. And then you have your restaurants that are big box restaurants. You know, I have 900 square foot to 9,000 square feet. So like I have restaurants that the smaller ones are doing well. Some are doing better. And then you have your ones that are the big box, 180 seats, big bars that you are offering to go on delivery, but they're down 70%, 50%, 60%, 40%. I'm all over the map, from some being up, only a couple, some being closed, and others being down way a lot, you know. So, you know, I'm lucky to have a good team, like we talked about the infrastructure before. My GMs and chefs have really taken the helm. Sacramento with Tim has really been great. Chef Anthony in Las Vegas, along with Amanda and my team there has been amazing. Bill, of course, is my regional. He's my vice president. He handles all of my GMs and everything. He's been a blessing. We've kind of been locked down. So I've been working in San Francisco on the line as much as I can, like I'm here today. So I've been able to maintain my Northeast stores. But, you know, when you look at everything else in its entirety, there's a lot of Zoom chats and calls and conference calls. And Michael Anthony to my partner George and Trevor, those two that are helping us out. I mean, there's ideas that come out. There's that marketing side of it. There's all these brainstormings, and it's almost like boom, boom, boom. You have to execute it now, or we're going to turn our Pizzaiolo neckerchiefs into, you know, scarf. You know, we're going to put around our mat. You wear them as masks, you know, like, let's just find out how we can make 500 of them and sell them and make money on the side and give them out to our employees. And I mean, it's always from the hip right now. It's like, okay, here's an idea. What do you think of this? Okay, let's do it. Let's get diverters. Let's get custom pens. I mean, so it's like the worst things in life sometimes bring out the best, at least when it comes to being more efficient, cutting back on labor, understanding your concept, and shrinking down your menu, being more creative when it comes to packages, or not so much couponing, but just deals. And people are looking for family meals or custom kits to bring home and make pizzas and make it communal and cooking pizzas at home and selling raw dough and cheese and sauce and, you know, and just giving somebody a bag of flour because they've been out at all the grocery stores and telling your neighbors, hey, don't worry about it. Just keep it and have fun with it. It's those type of things that come out and feeding your first responders and just trying to. Luckily, you have social media platforms where you're out there. Luckily, the pizza industry is deliverable. It's strong in the to-go category. And what I always say is pizza will prevail. It's one of the things that when it comes to all foods or all restaurants in this industry, and it's COVID, you know, 19 that's been very hindered, it's a pizza can bounce back. And it's can be catered. It can be frozen. And we're lucky in that market that it can be strong. And I feel bad for a lot of other restaurants or businesses that aren't strong or can be strong, at least semi-strong in the way things are now. So it's a challenge. It's a lot of nights of already not sleeping, even not sleeping more as it is, and trying to figure out when we do open for dine-in, how we're going to maintain ourselves at a 25% occupancy rate. When will it become a 50, and when will it become 100? It's the unknowing is always something that's very scary when it comes to an owner, because we like to be able to be in charge, make a decision, and go for it. But there's a lot of unexpected problems that come up, and it's more so now, and it's scary. So,
well, yeah. Not only are you trying to keep your business going, Tony, but I've witnessed, walking down the streets of North Beach neighborhood with you, and you're a relationship builder. People know you. They wave at you. They yell your name across the street. You've done a great job to build those relationships in the neighborhood, and I know that you've also done things to help others in that neighborhood. So those are long-lasting things that you do that are going to hopefully pay off more in the future too, as you do what you can to help your community.
Yeah, I love my neighborhood. I love our neighbors. You know, I'm the kind of guy that wants to give you a hug or shake your hand. It's been kind of weird not being able to do that, especially as an operator and owner, and just, you know, kissing babies and, you know, it's weird not to be able to do that. And it's interesting time right now.
As we close out this interview, I always like to ask my guests this in relation to leadership. What is your pearl of wisdom that you can leave with our listeners today?
I think lead by example when it comes to leadership. For me, I see that a lot. I see a lot of guys barking orders, telling people what to do. I was a yeller, you know, screamer when I was younger. I was put into a management position early in my career. I was young, 18, 19. I was just a kind of manager of a pizzeria that my brother had. And really kind of understanding how employees are. They're all different, making it all work. Everyone's a little different. I always look at it like organized sports. It's a team effort for me, understanding who's strong at certain points and who's not. It's not about the guy that can hit a million home runs, because that doesn't always win championships in a way. It's always a team effort. It's not about prima donnas. For me, I always look at it as something that if they can, you know, you can't teach somebody how to smile. You know, if it's there on the inside, it's an attribute that's very important for me. And for somebody that has drive or is willing to learn or wants to learn and can accept, you know, when you not so much reprimand them, but just start teaching them. I feel that's just very important. So for me, it's not all about me. A lot of people think it's, you know, I can do everything and don't worry. I never look for that employee that doesn't want help. I like for us to be able to accept help and want help, because at times we do need help. And to be able to just have that trade is so valuable, because then you're willing to learn and understanding it and getting better. And I think that's just so important in personal growth, both for myself and for my team and my family, which I really much feel that my team is my family.
Well, Tony, I just from my observation, you're a master at your craft. There's no question about it, but you're also a great businessman. You understand what's important. And I want to thank you for mentoring and coaching me and all the other people that make pizzas around the world. You're an amazing person. Thanks for this interview. And I just want to really thank you for all you do for not only your community, but pizza around the world. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Appreciate it. Thank you for having
okay.
me.
Okay. Take
you.
Care, Tony.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. To listen to all my interviews, subscribe to Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and many other popular podcast platforms. Some of these interviews are on video, and you can search YouTube for Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson. You can also access the entire library of interviews on my website, orange.coaching.com, and that is orange.coaching.com, and go to the Media Center and click on Podcasts or Video Gallery. You can also enter the website from pilpodcast.com.